Of illegals by land, sea, and air from all over the world. Enough to eclipse the populations of 36 individual U.S. states so far. 2. Prioritize the needs of these millions of non-citizens over the needs of the American citizen, with free flights, buses, hotels, meals, and phones, ensuring their loyalty to the political party that imported them. 3. Keep them in the country at all costs, even when they commit violent crime like murder and rape. Attack the language used to describe the criminals, as opposed to the criminals themselves. Slander critics as racist. 4. Ensure their privileges are made irrevocable with city and state sanctuary laws that act as population magnets. Codify permanent status and ensure non-cooperation with ICE. 5. Count the non-citizens in the census that will determine congressional apportionment in the House of Representatives. As of now, that would equal 13 extra congressional districts. A tremendous amount of electoral power. 6. Wage a massive, heavily funded lawfare campaign to change state voting laws that legalize mass mail-in ballots, no signature verification, and no proof of citizenship requirements, making it nearly impossible to prove voter fraud. 7. Lock in the permanent voting majority with campaign promises of lavish benefits and permanent privileges, enshrining generational fealty to the Democrat Party. 8. Win elections. 9. Entrenched single-party rule has been achieved. The best part? Your tax dollars are paying for it.
What is up, LFA TV? We are coming at you live from America. This is Matta of Fact, and I'm your host, Ryan Matta, and thank you for joining us. Today is Tuesday, May 28th, and we have a show planned for you today. Folks, if you guys have been watching the content that we've been putting out from Chicago, I got a surprise for you because we have two special guests that are going to be joining us today to talk about the atrocity that is Illinois, Chicago, the genocide that's taking place. Check this out. Illinois Senate passes $53.1 billion budget with tax hikes. And they also decided to give lawmaker salaries a raise amid the internal dispute. So I won't overtalk it. Please do me a huge solid and smash that like button for us. And make sure you guys swing down in the comments and you follow both of these American patriots down below. I won't overtalk it. Let me introduce Devin Jones and Latasha Fields. How are you doing today?
Good. Thank you for having us, Ryan. Yes.
It's an honor to have both of you on the show. I wanted to, you know, I'm over here, a white kid, telling everybody that there's this genocide of black people going on. And I think people think I'm crazy. But then you start to see things like this just got passed. And I don't know what else you could call it. So I'll let Devin introduce himself first, and then I'll bring Latasha on, and I'll let you introduce yourself, Latasha.
Sure. I'm Devin Jones, the chair of the Southside Republican Organization, 18th Ward Republican Committeeman, which is the Southwest side of Chicago, one of the 17 majority black wards in the city, U.S. Navy vet. So I always have to shout out the Navy. That's me.
Man, thank you so much for your service, and what a great day to bring you on right after Memorial Day. We God bless you, man. We greatly appreciate you. How about you, Latasha?
Yes, Latasha Fields. It's a pleasure to be here, Ryan. My husband and I, we are 18-year home educators, parental rights advocates. I am the founder of EPIC, Empowering Parents in Night and Community, and we also have a homeschool co-op and micro school here in Chicago. And I'm also the deputy committee Republican for the 21st Ward. My husband is the 21st Ward Republican committee, Ronald Field. So again, pleasure to be here.
It was so impressive. Before you guys got on, I got a little sneak peek of Latasha's homeschool setup. She has a bunch of kids in her house right now. She's homeschooling everybody, getting the kids out of the public schools. And it's an honor to have both of you on the show. And I want to talk a little bit about school, and I want to talk a little bit about kind of the funding, what's going on with the education and the statistics you were telling us all about. But Devin, I'm going to let you tell us a little bit about this. I want to read this title off, and it says Chicago. Oh, wrong one. We'll get into that one next. Illinois Senate passes $53.1 billion budget with tax hikes and boosts lawmakers' salaries amid internal dispute. So the way I understand it, and we were kind of talking about this before we went live, there is a super majority in the state of Illinois, meaning they don't even have to take bills to the floor, if I'm saying that correctly. Can you explain how that works with a supermajority?
So basically, that puts Republicans in the super minority status. That means that to even pass a constitutional amendment, the Democrats have more than a 3/5 majority in both the Illinois House and the Illinois Senate. And that supermajority means that because all of the committees are proportionate as well. So really, Republicans don't even have to show up for what's called a quorum, meaning the amount of people needed to conduct business in a day, to propose legislation, to vote on that legislation, to pass that legislation. Republicans really essentially are window dressing just to say we have a couple Republicans there. But really, they are not needed to conduct the legislative business of the Illinois General Assembly.
So that means that today, if they wanted to pass a bill that says we're going to tax the citizens of Illinois and 10% of those taxes are going to go directly to our personal bank accounts, they could pass a law and just overnight and apply it?
They could pass it. They have passed it. That's what this budget really is. And the governor will sign it. And unless we can come up with some type of, with a large sum of money to try to fight it in the state court, which is also heavily Democrat. Many of our elected judges are Democrat. A majority of the state Supreme Court is Democrat. So we wouldn't win it there unless we could somehow get it into a federal court and take it all the way up to the Supreme Court, provided that it violates the U.S. Constitution. We basically are stuck with the government that we have.
And how does that play into what we're seeing here with the migrant crisis? Can you walk us through a little bit about how this evolved? Were you guys always a sanctuary city, or is this something that now that they have this supermajority, they've just been passing all these radical laws?
So Chicago has been called a sanctuary city or a welcoming city since I believe like 1986, since the mid to late 80s, where Harold Washington first implemented that via executive order. And then I believe it was Rahm Emanuel in the late 2000, like the right before he left, who got the city council to further expand an welcoming city ordinance, which is part of the municipal code, which is kind of like our city constitution, if you will. And so it further expanded it. You know, it mandated that law enforcement will not cooperate with ICE. So if a illegal immigrant, if a foreign national is arrested here and they are found to be illegally present, we just skip over that part and we go after whatever crime they committed, but we treat them like they're a citizen, which under the Illinois Safety Act means that they just, you know, show themselves before a judge and then they get out for things like murders, rapes, child abuse, you name it. We're just letting people out. They just show themselves before a judge and they're out. So at the state level, I do not remember what year we made this a welcoming or sanctuary state, but we have always protected illegal immigrants in this state, at least my entire life. I'm 38. So I was born in 1986. So my entire life, I've always known that there were hundreds of thousands of illegal immigrants here in the city of Chicago, from Polish people to Irish people to African, illegal Africans, illegal Mexicans and Latin Americans. We are a smorgasbord of illegally present people from all parts of the globe. And we have been my entire life.
Yeah, I don't think that most of my audience, like I was talking to you guys earlier about this, I went down to Texas and all these border states, and I'm watching all of these thousands and thousands, sometimes 10,000 a day getting processed through these specific cities, and I'm watching the damage, and I thought that was bad. And then I went to Chicago, and you realize that Chicago is there. You have this supermajority. So when it comes to radical left policies, your city and state is taking the full brunt, the full weight of this tyranny from the Democrat Party, which is leading to an all-out genocide. I wanna get into that a little bit more, but I forgot I had only told Natasha a half hour. So if she has to run at the 2:30 mark, I know she got kids down there to teach. So I wanna give her enough time to talk a little bit about the education part. So can you tell us a little bit about these educational statistics in the inner cities in Chicago?
Yes, Ryan. So as we've talked previously, and in reference to this bill, within this billion-dollar budget, they want to allocate roughly $518 million towards education. And as we know, in reference to this state, It seems to be, no matter how much money they are allocating, the children's academic and proficiency levels are still low. And so, as most of your audience may know, as a state, we're at approximately 35% of our children are reading on grade level. And then in math is 27%. And then unfortunately, when we get to the city of Chicago, we're looking at 83% are not proficient in reading on grade level, and 92% are not proficient in math. And so what I find is very appalling that taxpayer dollars are continually increasing and our children's academic level is decreasing literally. And so when you think about the population of CPS, and I'm just gonna make sure I read off these statistics correctly. In 2019, CPS had a population of 360,000. And so today we're looking at 323,000. And so in 2019, there was $7.6 billion allocated for 360,000 children, and their proficiency levels were low. And so now we're here where there's 323,000, and now the budget for CPS is $9.5 billion. And then we have this, you know, we have this state budget that they want to allocate even the more so. And so as taxpayers, you know, we should be proposing a lot of questions because, again, it seems that there has to be some kind of misallocation of resources because this is not working. You know, the more taxes that we pay, literally, our children are being dumbed down. And then, of course, Ryan, we have the sexualization. And I'm pretty sure most of your listeners should be aware of this egregious overspreading of sexualization that is happening in governmental schools. And so Illinois is one of the states that have passed comprehensive sex education. And so that became law here in 2021, and the LGBT history became law here in 2019. And so there is, again, this sensational appetite to sexualize our children and even social indoctrinate our children. But yet there's no three R's, reading, writing, arithmetic, going on in these government schools. And so that is the unfortunate landscape of what's happening to our children all across this state. And again, it gets even worse when we talk about the city of Chicago with CPS.
Can you tell us a little bit more about those laws that you just spoke of? What laws mm-hmm. were passed and what are they?
Yes. Yeah, so in 2019, there was a big push, well, prior to that, actually, to put LGBT history in Illinois public schools. And what the law states is that children will not be able to graduate eighth grade without the comprehensive knowledge of the LGBT history. And so even then, I've been following, since I've been homeschooling, because again, we've been homeschooling 18 years, but early 2008 is when the law really started removing even more veils off my eyes, and I started filing education policies. Because again, as a parental rights advocate, we want to always make sure we protect our rights to give our children the best quality education, especially Christian education. And so I began to follow what was happening through the Obama administration. And so that's when we say the floodgates of hell opened up on this country, because that's when we seen the aggressive appetite of homosexuality coming into the country, the legalization of same-sex marriages. And then I started seeing bills coming, legislative policy proposing to really take over government education from the Marxist ideology and all these different phenomenals. And so what the law began to do is kind of take me through this timeline journey from like 1635 up until now, and showing me the timeline that what we're seeing in our government education system is not a COVID thing, right? But COVID exposed a lot, but this has been literally an education pandemic. And so there are many purveyors like Horace Mann, John Dewey, Alice Bailey, different ones that have been on the scene as early as the 1700s, that they have strategically planned these things. And so fast forward to 2008, Obama becomes president, then you have War Accord. And so I began to follow this global Antichrist agenda where they wanted to implement the UNCRC, which is the United Nations Convention of the Rights of a Child. And so there's a big sexualization movement with Afro-Kente that they're picking up to literally sexualize kids, take away parental rights. And it is just a Antichrist globalist agenda from the International Planned Parenthood, the World Health Organization, the World Economic Forum. And so all of these organizations are the organizations behind the sexualization of children and the dumbing down of kids. And so that's what we see happening. So Prixar, unfortunately, is a big supporter of this sexualizing of children across the country. His money, unfortunately, stems long. You know, his hands is in a lot of financial pockets in promoting this huge sexualization of children. So they passed the LGBT history in 2019. And so within my little sphere of influence, I'm telling parents, I'm warning parents, I've been warning them a long time, you know, you need to get your kids out of public school, because think about it. Here in America, we're so used to saying the LGBT that I fear that some of us have lost sight of what those acronyms mean, what those letters mean, right? So those letters denote their behavior. And so I'm telling parents, if they're going to put the history into the school, then what's coming, which I've been knew about comprehensive sex ed, because they have tried it out in Africa. They was trying it out in Europe. So it was already in full effect. They just needed a doorway to get it into the United States. And Obama was that doorway. And so we were trying to blow the alarm and said, listen, they're going to bring comprehensive sexual education into the school system. And it's a very pornographic curriculum, very explicit, where they're teaching children as young as 8 years old. I don't know, you know, what can be said on your show, as young as 8 years old to masturbate. Right. And that is in the National Sex Education Guidelines. They're teaching them transgender ideology. They're giving them hormone therapy. They're teaching them the consent to sexual activity, all forms of sexual activity, anal, oral, everything by sixth grade. They're teaching them, they're promoting abortion to our young girls. And so that's what hit Illinois in 2019. And then Pritzker finally signed CSE, Comprehensive Sex Ed, in 2021. And then he repealed also in 2021, the parental notification of abortion. And so what that means, prior to him repealing that, Illinois parents had a right to be notified. They had been took away the parental rights here from this regard in terms of abortion, that parents could no longer give consent, but at least parents will be notified. But he repealed that. So now our daughters, 17 and under, can get an abortion without parental consent and without being notified. So that is what's happening. So that's why I said it is so dangerous for children to be in Illinois public school system. It is a literal genocide, just even from that perspective, because again, those babies are the crops they pick from. And then there's a lot of other bills looming, coming down the pipeline in Illinois. We're sitting in the Rules Committee. We have a bill. We just did a press conference fighting back. And I must admit, the whole state fought back. You know, it wasn't a, there's a train passing. Yeah, I don't know who right. train is that. Oh, yeah. That we push back. A lot of conservatives and moms and families all across the country push back. But Illinois wanted to make us child abusers, that if we didn't allow our children's healthy genitals to be mutilated, and it's still sitting there, but everybody fought back that it's just sitting in Rules Committee. Then there's another bill where parents that are on public aid, If their children are 12 and older, they can make their own family planning decisions. So we have a number of bills that are just encompasses this sexual indoctrination of our kids, where it's just attacking these babies within the walls of these government schools. So when Pricks and them talking about investing more money, there's no hope of you guys investing more money, because again, we're already paying $9.5 billion in taxes, and it's $29,000 per kid in Chicago public schools, and we're not seeing anything. So we have less kids in a school, but we're paying more money. That math doesn't add up, right? It doesn't add up. Parents don't have transparency in these schools. They just don't know what's going on. And so I thank God for opportunities like this to get the word out, to bring more awareness to parents and inform parents of how wicked and how evil this system really is.
Yeah, it's beyond evil. I want to play a video I had sent you earlier, and I want to get your take on what you think should be done, or if you think this should be done. Check this out.
Oh, pedophiles, though, should definitely be put to their death on a public stage. You touch our kids, we'll kill you. I think that message needs to be sent very clearly.
What do you think? Is that the message we need to send?
I think so. I think so. I absolutely think so. Because when you think about this sexual rights movement that they're doing to children, and if anybody has done any research on Afrikinze, the things that have been recorded that this man has done or proposed to do to children, yeah.
Tell us a little bit about that. I haven't heard much about him. So tell us about it.
Yeah. So Alfred Kinsey is coined the father of the sexual rights revolution. And so there's the Alfred Kinsey Institution. It was in Indiana. And basically what they would do is have pedophiles, clearly, make babies, you know, kids as early as 5 months old to have orgasms. And so basically they say that baby kids are innate, you know, from birth to have these sexual orgies and these sexual feelings from birth, and that children have a right to these pleasures early on. And so it is just absolutely disgusting, just disgusting. These people are so disgusting, you know, and the things that they're promoting. And so again, that is the curriculum in Illinois public school systems, you know. It is really, really, you know, I lose atrocious. Words for how wicked and unconscionable this stuff is. You know, they say that children have a right to abortion and to be sexual and to have sexual relationship without the knowledge and consent of their parents. You know, a child who has a right to sexual pleasure even at the youngest age is a primary human right. So it's just, they have their core philosophies, right? And so there are just so many things within this thing within comprehensive sex ed that they're promoting. And so we just have to tell parents, they have to get them out. You know, they have to exit. And so we are big proponents of exiting the public education system. And what I can say to Black people, you know, when you think about, we've been fighting, if you will, against these education disparities. And I just start from the days of G. Carter Woodson and Booker T. Washington. And so when you go from their stance with education, you talk about 91 years, we have been fighting for education equality. We have been fighting against these disparities. And so I'm proposing and asking Black parents, you know, in 9 more years, it's gonna be 100 years. And so I have no hope. I am very anti-public education. So I have no hope. I am not a reformer. I believe we have to exit to protect. There's no reform in the system. And people say it's broken. No, it's not broken, Ryan. It's working just as intended. That's what people have to realize, that this system is not broken. It is doing just what's been intended for us to do. It is working just as they plan it to work. Okay. And so when the church has a huge part to play in this too, because when they legislated Bible and prayer out, the church as a whole in America should have bowed face. We should have said, never mind. Right. And so now here we are, 2020, 2024, COVID revealed a lot of things. And then some people are shocked and surprised. Well, you shouldn't be, right? You shouldn't be shocked and surprised. As a church community, as the faith-based community, Christians, you shouldn't be shocked. Because when you remove the covering, when you remove Christ out, when you remove those things out, wasn't nothing coming in but hate. That's all was coming in, because there was no protection for these children. And so we should have never went in. And so in the days of Booker T. Washington, as most should know, or probably have forgotten, we had over 5,000 schools. Booker T. Washington and Julian Rosenwald had built over 5,000 schools for African Americans. And Brown versus Board of Education literally destroyed that, demolished that. And so I tell people, I'm a Booker T. Washington girl. I believe we can be as one in the hand, one as the hand as separate as the fingers. I am proposing we need to educate our own. That's just the bottom line. We need to educate our own. And especially in these urban cities like Chicago, where we know these democratic policies are doing nothing but destroying these children, nothing but the school to prison pipeline. This thing is real. This is not conspiracy. This is not theories. This is factual. And then I am educating children out of Illinois public school. I have some downstairs in my basement. So I'm telling you, I'm not talking about statistics. I'm telling you, I'm looking at these babies. I'm teaching them. Then they're coming out 12, 10, 13, 14, 15 years old and cannot read. So this ain't statistics for me. I'm living this. I'm seeing these babies. And then they have so much hope and confidence, which is good, because the school have done so much of social promoting them and making them think that they're on level, and these babies are not. And even deceiving parents. So this is real. You know, I just want to tell people, this is real. This, you know, we quote these statistics, they're real, but I'm living it. And I'm not the only one. I'm saying it. Many parents are pulling their children out of public school. I do many interviews with parents, and that's what they're all telling me. My baby can't read at grade level. They got an IEP, this, and that. So it's real, Ryan, and it's very, very heartbreaking. that these children are not being able to read. So I'm gonna close with this. 5 to 10 years down the road, what are we gonna have? What are our babies gonna be prepared for? What kind of generation of young people are we going to have? And then you have, they wanna dump all this money into college. Into college? How are they gonna do college? Damn. They're not ready for college. They're not even ready to pass the ACT and SATs, if you will. You know, even though we're big personally, our homeschool organization, our school, me and my husband, we're entrepreneurs. We're big on trades. My husband is a barber. My background is real estate. My son is graduating this month. This is it for him. He's going into welding. We're huge on promoting trades, no doubt. Huge. And we need to advocate that more anyway. We need to bring in more of trade and vocational skills. And let me say this, that's not a cop out because kids can't perform on the college level. No. For one, it saves debt. And for two, those skills will never leave. We need to cultivate those kind of skills in our children, right? And so even in that, they still have to take tests. My son still have to take a pipe fitting test. There's still a lot of math and geometry, et cetera, in those tests. So we still have to prepare our babies. And so I fear that if we don't get a handle on our families and on this education system, especially in Chicago, we're gonna lose a lot of our children. We're gonna lose them.
I agree. I couldn't agree more. I mean, how many children are dying every day in Chicago right now because of crime and everything else that's happening in that city? And you said it right. It's by design. What did you call it? You called it the school to prison pipeline?
Yes, definitely. So as you look at the statistics and crime and you look at the literacy rate, and there is evidence that, you know, it's spiritual, just a form of insecurity. And it's not making excuses that because the fact you can't read or write, that mean you go do crime. That's not an excuse for that. But unfortunately, it's just the way it goes. It's the sin nature, right? And so that lack of insecurity, that lack of not knowing, unfortunately, it just breeds that. It's not to condemn these babies, right? They need to be taught better. They need to be redirected. But unfortunately, history has proven that's just what it does. And so when these kids are coming out illiterate and can't count, that's what happened. Because I'm going to just give this transparent testimony. Even my husband, when he was in school, we talk about it all the time. He said because where he felt that he was and getting stereotyped, in his mind, all he felt he could do was just be bad, if you will, right? Mm-hmm. Just misbehave, right? And because he felt school wasn't for him, that, you know, they had pretty much indoctrinated him, that he was inadequate, he couldn't learn, you know what he resorted to the streets. Mm-hmm. You know, but by the grace of God, God saved my husband's life. He did all that craziness that we could talk about, right? He went through it all. But again, by the grace of God, at 21 years old, that man gave his life to Christ. Amen. Now we've been married almost 20 years, 4 kids. He owned 2 businesses, successful, but that's by the grace of God, right? So we know they will be okay, but still we should do all that we can to prevent our children from going down those roads, going to prison, being murdered in the streets, some killing each other, all these horrible, horrible things that are happening to our children. And unfortunately we can stem it from not having that adequate education and not to leave undone the family structure, you know, not to excuse that because we can't just point the finger at government and schools. We have to look at the homes too. We're big on parents too, right? Because parents have a responsibility. First and foremost, you have a responsibility for where you send your children, right? And so that's why we have EPIC, Empowering Parents. That's why it says that first. Because we can't want to rescue children and then we leave the household undone. Because what I've always said, we should make sure that their parents are the heroes in these children's eyes. I don't want nobody to take the gleam of my children's eyes but me and my husband. We're the heroes that they see first. I don't care who we study. We're the everyday heroes. We're the living pistols in this house. The black man that go to work to provide for them every day, that's the black man that they're going to honor first and foremost. And so that's why we want to undergird and empower and strengthen parents to take back their reasonable service, to take authority and control over their children. But we got to all come together to get that done. This is not an overnight process, right? And so that's why. And so when we empower parents, it's inevitable that our communities will be ignited. It's just inevitable. It's just going to work that way. We're going to see a transformation of our communities when parents are standing and being who they need to be to their children.
Amen to that. Amen, guys. I know everybody in the live chat's going crazy right now. Dude, do us a huge favor and smash this like button for Latasha, and let's pack this show so more people can hear exactly what's going on and happening in Chicago. I want to give Devin, I know it's that 2:30 mark. Do you have to leave us? You got to get back to the kids?
Yes, I do. So thank you, Ryan, so much. God bless all your listeners.
Do
love
me,
you
do
all.
Me a quick favor. Yeah. Where can everybody follow you at?
Yes, I am on all social media at Latasha H. Fields. So you can find me on all of it, right? And I'm also on Rumble. I just started, Ryan. So I'm on Rumble as well, and YouTube and all that good stuff. And our website, if you want more information about the work that we're doing in the city of Chicago, you can find us at Epic, and that's EPIC, the number 4, change.org. That's EpicForChange.org. And I look forward to seeing all of you. Yes, God bless you all.
God bless you, Latasha. Thank you so much for joining us, and come back whenever you got more time. We'd love to have you back on. All right, Devin. So tell me a little bit about, let's pick up a little bit where she left off at, and let's talk about how does the lack of education, and we had talked about it a little bit before, I don't want to say that there's a gang problem in Chicago as much as there is a lack of opportunity problem in Chicago. And it seems to be by design. How does that play into, you know, the gang violence, the amount of deaths? Are they dumbing down a population specifically because they know that if these people can't read, write, they're not going to have an opportunity. They're going to end up on the streets.
Absolutely. And then you bring in a group of people who don't speak the language. And so you can form and fashion them and their children however you want to, especially in the place. See, I think what people don't understand is that Chicago has been a progressive haven. It's been the Vatican of American progressivism, if you will, for almost 100 years now. You know, when you think of the University of Chicago, which produces so much progressive policy, many of our universities are literal think tanks, and they farm this policy out to California. They farm this policy out to New York. You think of Michael Madigan, who was the Speaker of the Illinois House for, I think, almost my entire life, going back to the 80s. You think of J.B. Pritzker, who's our current governor, and he farms leftist LGBTQ ideology specifically as it relates to the transing of little children and the mutilation of their genitalia. He farms that to states like Washington, California, New York, so on and so forth. Dick Durbin. I mean, we could go down the list of politicians that basically create this stuff and think tanks that create this stuff in Chicago and then evangelize it across the United States. And we know that American progressivism is our form of really communism, of socialism. So there has, you know, I remember a couple of months ago, there was this debate on Twitter and in conservative circles where they were laughing because I think Pete Buttigieg said that roads were racist. And people didn't understand what that meant. When you come to a place like Chicago, the way that they design roads are racist. They literally built highways to destroy communities and to segregate the city. So Black people live on one side of the highway. And then if you try to move to another side of the highway, realtors will not sell you that house. Renters won't rent to you. The insurance fees and different things like that are more expensive. Those roads are the boundaries to, and it's the difference between $4.23 for gas versus $3.53 for gas. So the way that Chicago was created, almost was to be like a test case for what we see now with this hyper racialized society, with this dumbing down of entire populations, with this creating problems, creating violence. And then you have a program or a grant program to solve the violence, but the money actually goes to friends of politicians. It enriches them and it creates this cycle over and over again. And then our tax money is basically, the piggy bank for that. So we have high taxes because we have so many problems that the government has to solve, but they never solve them. It just goes into a grant program that the friends of whoever is in charge gets to pull from. So that's kind of, if that makes sense, that's, and I know that sounds very conspiracy theory, but it's not. That is literally what happens here in Chicago, and then it is evangelized to Washington, D.C. It's evangelized to your locality. It's evangelized to other states. So Chicago-style politics has, thanks to Barack Obama mostly, has become American-style politics at this point.
Walk me through what you guys have. How hard was it for you to start the Southside GOP? What resources? There's very few of you out there that are doing what you are doing, boots on the ground, that has the ear of the entire community. What? How hard was it to start that? And what support have you received from the GOP?
Basically what happened was I ran for committeeman in 2020 because I got tired of...
What is committeeman?
So committeeman is basically the... that's who runs your party. This is across the country. So you have precinct committeemen if you live in mostly rural areas, which is like literally your voting precinct. And then here in Chicago, we do ward committeemen. So that a ward is the jurisdiction that your city councilman comes from. In the suburbs inside of Cook County, that we have township committeemen, and you vote for those people at the primary. So if you're a Democrat, you vote for a Democrat committeeman. If you're a Republican, you vote for a Republican committeeman. So I noticed we had a committeeman that wasn't doing anything. Basically, what the committeeman does is they run the party, they find candidates, they register voters, they do all of the political party stuff in your area. So if you don't know about, if you don't know what candidates are running, it's because you have a terrible committeeman. If you don't know what the Republican Party is doing in your area, you either don't have a committeeman or you have a really bad committeeman that's not getting the message out to you. Here in Illinois, we also appoint election judges. So if you don't have any Republican election judges at your polling place in Illinois, it's because your Republican committeeman is not doing his or her job, or you don't have one. So I noticed that in Chicago, at that time, it was 18 majority Black wards. They had no committeemen or committeemen who weren't doing anything. So instead of just, I realized that quickly, I would have to be not just the 18th ward committeeman, but I would have to expand into those areas that did not have anybody telling them that we don't have to be stuck up under Democrat governance. So I literally, the day after I was elected, I filed with the state of Illinois. I created the Southside Republican Organization. And it was just me and my two brothers. I actually adopted, I used to be a Catholic school teacher. I've always been anti-public education because I was failed by the Chicago public school system. So while I was teaching, two of my students were homeless, and I went to the military to basically adopt them. I stopped teaching so that I could be in a position to adopt them, join the military so I could have a job to put food on the table and keep them out of the public school system. Wow. Anyway, it was just the three of us. Say that again.
I said, you're a hero, man. Literally, God bless you.
I appreciate that. I mean, and it was really the working of God that led me to do that. And I would do it again 100 times over if I could. So it was just the three of us. They were in college. And so they were helping me out administratively. And in 2021, I was introduced to Latasha and her husband. In 2023, or actually recently, I was introduced to Kay, and she decided to take over the 17th ward. Latasha and her husband took over the 21st ward. And we had, you know, we would have volunteers in and out. Latasha ran for lieutenant governor, and we were able to increase Republican turnout in my ward, the 18th ward, between 2020 and this year by 115%. So we doubled it, more than doubled Republican turnout. In Latasha's ward, we increased it by 216%, which is the largest increase of any ward in Chicago of Republicans. People basically said, I'm not voting Republican anymore. I'm not voting Democrat anymore. I'm going to pull a Republican ballot. So 216% in her ward. In Kay's ward, the 17th ward, 140%, and in the 16th ward, 56%. You asked, do we receive any resources from the state GOP, the city GOP, the county GOP? recently, the Cook County GOP has started sharing our stuff. And I don't, you know, a lot of people will bash them. I don't want to bash them because I don't want to get in a war with these people. But no, they don't actually help. They just don't. That's the reality of it. We fund this stuff ourselves. I will give a shout out to people, individuals in the Republican Party who have donated. Richard Porter, who was our state central committeeman, he was the committeeman for the RNC, and Dean White, who just became our new committeeman to the RNC, they have donated, as well as a lot of individuals. But most of our financial support comes from people in Alabama, Florida, Texas, different things like that. Other than that, we are funding that office that you visited. We're funding that ourselves. I write a check out of my pocket every month to pay the rent on that, because I just believe that we do not have to be subjected to what we are being subjected to. And the time is now for us to find candidates that we run that are responsive to our needs, because government is of, for, and by us. We don't belong to government. It belongs to us. And so we have a very full agenda. It's not just America first. It's America only. In the Southside Republicans, we don't believe in supporting anybody. And I mean anybody. If Chicago looks the way that it does, how do we have a dime to send to anybody worldwide? We need every cent right here at home, period. We have 60,000 foreign nationals. We don't know where they're from. We don't know who they are. They're stabbing each other in the streets here. Rapes are through the roof at this point. And yet we always have a heart for somebody that doesn't live in this country that's not a United States citizen. Absolutely not. So our agenda is America first, America only. Our agenda is a limited government that the people... that's so small that people can hold it accountable. And hey, if the Republican Party is not going to get on board with what we believe, that this is a government of, for, and by the people, then we'll just take over the Republican Party.
Let's go, Devin. Give me one second. Let me jump in. I gotta do a quick commercial break, and I want to come right back to that. And I actually got a video from Kay. She sent me, because she's so passionate about what you guys are fighting for. The second that this article broke this morning, she sent us a video. So I want to play that. Hold that thought. We'll be right back. Folks, let me let you in on our first sponsor today, AmmoSquared.com. AmmoSquared.com helps you stay stocked up on ammunition automatically. You grow your ammo slowly over time. It's stored for free while it builds up, and it ships to you wherever you want it and ships out in just 1 to 2 business days. Ammo Squared was started in 2015 and has over 30,000 customers across the country. It's truly automated, set it and forget it ammo purchasing. You pick your caliber, you set your budget, you select the shipping trigger, and that's it. Your ammo builds up slow over time, and it's delivered to you automatically whenever you want it. And it's great for when times when there's those images short, those D's in the chat was just telling us about how there's this shortage on the materials that go into making ammunition. So you never know when you're going to run out. And this is awesome. They got free shipping over $250. So you can scroll through this list of ammunition right here on their website. You pick whatever calibers you want. You can do multiple calibers at one time. You say, I want to put in $50 a month. And then after you hit $250, you get free shipping. So what's better than that? Swing over to AmmoSquared.com and support those. They're one of my favorite sponsors over here. Followed by my second favorite, which is Done With Debt, folks. They call them debt traps. And those debt traps that you caught in, yeah, those aren't your fault. You didn't cause inflation. You didn't set gas prices. And you sure as heck didn't jack up those credit card rates or the interest rates on those credit cards. No, but the thing with these debt traps is they're going to destroy your life if you don't get out now. And the only company I recommend is Done With Debt, folks. Done With Debt has brilliant debt strategists. And they'll stand between you and your bill collectors. They negotiate a plan to get you out of debt permanently without bankruptcy and without taking out loans. But listen, some of these strategies, they're time sensitive. So you need to contact Done With Debt right now, like today. It couldn't be any easier. Get a free consultation, share what you're dealing with, and they'll explain a strategy to erase your debt faster and easier than you ever thought possible. Go to donewithdebt.com, folks. That is donewithdebt.com. And if you get a second, swing down to the LFA merch store, folks. There's no better way to start your day than with that roasted pecan Rise Up coffee that Jeremy's created. It is absolutely my favorite. We got hats, hoodies, t-shirts, coffee mugs, great gifts for friends and family. And again, there is no better way to support us over here on LFA TV than directly in our merch store. And if you want to support us over here at Matter of Fact, you can go to mypillow.com/Matter and you'll get 50 to 65% off everything store wide. And if you guys want to stack some Bitcoin, which I highly recommend you doing to keep away the keep out the government's tyrannical hands out of your bank accounts, then swing down in the description. You'll get some free Bitcoin if you use either of my affiliate links. If you are outside of the USA, Bybit is the one I recommend the most. They give you the most free Bitcoin with your purchase. And before I overtalk it, let's get back into this, Devin. Welcome back to the show, folks. Do us a huge favor. If you guys are enjoying this content, please smash that like button and help share this. After I play this video, Devin, I want you to let everybody know where they can donate and support you instead of donating directly to the GOP and hoping it lands in one of these. Let's just donate to the organizations that are out here doing it themselves. But I want to play this video from Kay. This is her response to the amount of money, which is just insane, because not only did the Senate just pass the law that they're going to have a $53.1 billion budget, and they're going to pay for that by raising taxes on the citizens of Chicago by, I think it's $750 million. They're going to get a raise, of course, and inflation's going to skyrocket. So let me play this clip from Kay. She's at work. This is how dedicated these people are. She's at work in her scrubs, and she sent me this video this morning.
Also passed $182 million in this budget for illegals, for foreign nationals. I will not call them asylum seekers, because if you know the definition of an asylum seeker, I guess they think we can't afford Webster dictionaries, but thank God for Google, right? It's when someone leaves their country and they go to another country as a political refugee. But when you talk to these people, they tell you that they came here for more money. They came here for a better life. They came here for a better paying job. That is not a political refugee. But this is what our politicians want us to believe. This is a whole, as Eddie Murphy say, the banana in a tailpipe. But okay. In this budget, I further read that there's supposed to be two programs for non-citizen, same group of people, where it talks about a Medicaid funding benefit, which is supposed to be $440 million, which is supposed to come from a general revenue fund. For who? Foreign nationals. But then it says or $620 million total from state funds. Is it 440? Is it 629? Which one is it, people? I mean, what are we doing here? But in all of this, we're going to pay more taxes here in the state of Illinois, in the city of Chicago. We've been duped, but guess what? Our legislative, that's what they did. You would think, well, okay, we're all paying taxes. Even the senators are going to be paying more taxes, right? They included in this $53.1 billion a 5% pay increase for lawmakers. So while we're going to pay more, they're going to get a 5% pay increase. So guess what? This $53.1 billion tax hike that we're going to be paying for, it won't be affecting the lawmakers because they're getting a 5% raise. Isn't that some BS right there? You have people who are paying more property taxes here in Chicago, in Cook County. Gas is high. Healthcare is ridiculous. And I am a healthcare professional, but it's ridiculous. You have patients that can't even afford their co-pays, right? Okay. Think about that. Education.
Folks, I had to cut it a little bit short because it was actually a 9-minute video and that was just part of the clips, but please swing over and follow SS_REPUBCHGO over on X. I will be tagging her in the full video. I posted 5 minutes of it already today. So if you want to see it, it's over on my timeline. But Devin, tell us a little bit about what she was talking about there.
So, you know, again, $53.1 billion. This is a 3,374-page document. This $182 million for migrants, $440 million for migrant health care. That's on top of the fact that between 2020 and 2024, we've already spent $1 billion on migrant health care from Medicare and Medicaid. It is insane that citizens who cannot afford this we have to pay for this. And it's not just this, because when you look in it, it's grant program after grant program after grant program. We know that those grants are going to go to friends of the politicians. It's more than $440 million for migrant healthcare or foreign national healthcare, and more than $182 million. I guarantee you that in this $53 billion budget, there's upwards of $2 billion for migrants. There's upwards of $2 billion for these foreign nationals to live here, to be fed by us, to have their clothing paid for, to get cars. They don't have to have licenses the way that we have to have them. They will have entrepreneurship programs for them. When they go to these schools, these Chicago public schools, and they have all these reading and literacy programs, all these entrepreneurial programs, they get to tap into that. They get to tap into the various contracts that the state government is going to give to build roads and bridges, to plant trees, to you name something that we pay for. They are going to, on the backs of Black people, right? Because everything is DEI and Black people get a portion somewhere. Black people means gay. It means non-binary. It means Latino. It means Asian. It means undocumented. It means whatever you want it to mean, except for white people. That's what's going to happen with this budget, is that most of the things that are in here are going to go to migrants. If it says something for African Americans, it's not going for us, it's going for migrants. That's what she's talking about. And we don't have the money to pay this. We don't have any more home equity. We cannot afford the license plate sticker on our car, or the sticker that the state charges $150 a year. We cannot afford the city sticker at over $100 a year. We cannot afford to prop up another nation's group of people that they kicked out. Those people need to go back home. We need to, one, lower taxes so that people like Latasha's husband, who owns a business, can thrive and hire more American citizens in that business. And we need to get government under control, under our control. Right now, it's not responsive to us. And it is a genocide against Black people specifically. And it will expand to non-Black people.
You know, I think people thought, like, when I came back from Chicago and I'm yelling, there's a genocide of Black people taking place, I don't think people can comprehend and really wrap their head around. So let me just show you guys some statistics over here. In Chicago, this is just year to date. There has been 178 people shot and killed, shot and wounded 834, total shot 1,012, total homicides 208. And if you take a look at the demographics, right, the amount of Black people, 78%, 18% Hispanic, 78%. So, Devin, tell me, if that $3 billion were to actually be given to community leaders, people like yourself, and actually invested back into the communities, and we had an FBI that would investigate corrupt politicians and hold these people accountable for the crimes that they are committing, in over, let's say that's what Biden did on day one, right? He started to invest all of that money in actually the right places. How many people do you think would have been shot by now, 3 years later?
I think if crime was prosecuted, that's the first investment, is the prosecution of crime. We would see that number drop, right? If we were investigating, prosecuting crimes. I think if taxes were lower, and people who own small businesses could actually be able to hire. See, that's where the investment needs to go. If you're going to invest in somebody, invest in small businesses, because they're going to hire people on the block. We already invest in these so-called community leaders, and they do nothing but make more criminals. They do nothing but rape and pillage our community. And I'll give you a really quick example. Danny Davis, who's a sitting U.S. congressman from the West Side, his niece was arrested in 2015 because she has stolen more than $3 million of flu, HIV, and other communicable diseases of grant money that was supposed to be invested in the community, and she was a community leader. She stole that money, and so so it was gone. That's the type of things that a Biden administration, that a Pritzker administration, and even some of the Republicans fund and fuel. So the money needs to go back to the taxpayers. It shouldn't be reinvested. It should stay with the people who already know what to do. And we will see that come down to near zero, because when people have jobs and they own property, they don't shoot the block up.
That's exactly what I was thinking you were going to say. Something very similar to, you know, it's not a crime problem, it's an opportunity problem. If there was a, I keep telling, screaming this in my chat, if there was a way for these 12 and 14 year olds to go get a good paying job and put money into their pockets and start saving, and they weren't just forced to go to the streets for crime because there's no opportunity. They have no other hope of ever getting out. Everybody, I mean, even the poor people know that you have to have money to do something, right? Yes. So I think with that mindset is, if I can just take enough from somebody else, maybe I can have a hope of chance to get out of this. But at the at the end of the day, there's nothing. There's no businesses moving to those areas to open up. There's no skilled trades. And I was talking to some people we interviewed that were saying, like, they wanted an abandoned building, or this warehouse was just kind of vacant, and they wanted a little bit of, actually, they didn't even want any money. They just wanted rights to use the facility. And they were actually going to create like a co-op where they were going to take kids off the streets. They were going to pay them a small amount of money to do repairs, but they were going to teach them how to do carpentry, teach them how to weld, teach them how to fix up this building. And they were going to renovate this with local kids in the local community. That all they wanted was the building that was abandoned. Instead of giving it to them, they took it and they spent like millions of dollars renovating it so they could put migrants in there.
That's the story of Chicago. You went to Inglewood. Most of those vacant lots are actually owned by the city of Chicago. So if they gave that stuff back to the community, what could they do? How would Inglewood look if the government did not own a majority of those lots and keep them vacant so that they could create some type of wealth creation program that really only creates wealth for themselves and their friends?
Explain that. We got about 4 minutes, but explain what you mean by that.
So basically what happened, you know, during the housing crisis, a lot of people could not afford their property. The city came in because of tax debt, or just because they abandoned it because they couldn't afford the mortgages. The city comes in, takes the land, raises the house, creates a vacant lot. They sit on top of the lot. You then have to go to your alderman, have all these different conversations in the hopes that they will possibly sell you the lot, or sell you the abandoned school, sell you the abandoned factory, whatever. They never do it. Unless you grease their palms, they don't want to grease your palms. So what ends up happening is you have whole communities sitting on with nothing but vacant lots, dilapidated buildings, abandoned industry that the community could come in and figure out on their own how to literally fix where they live. But because the aldermen and the city council, because the mayor, because government will not release that property that they shouldn't be holding on to, it creates a blight. This is a manufactured urban blight in most of these black neighborhoods, when they could give it to the neighbor to do something, to do anything. Anything is better than just sitting there with weeds and grass and broken bottles and needles and drugs and stuff laying around. If they did that, gave it to some of the people that you have talked to, they could create industry. They could create skills. You give a building to Latasha, what do you think she's going to do with it? How many kids will be educated? So because they won't do that, it's manufactured. And then we just get all these statistics every Monday about how horrible Chicago is and how black people just ain't doing nothing for themselves. We can't. We don't own the property. We don't own where we live. The government artificially keeps us poor and destabilized. And so the only thing that is there is crime.
And now if they sell it to one of these migrant companies, they're going to get their palms greased. But we got 1 minute. I want you to tell everybody, where can we donate? Sure. Where can we support you? How can we follow you?
SouthsideGOP.org, SouthsideGOP.org. You can donate there on all social media, SouthsideGOP, including Truth. And then my personal Twitter is at Devio, D-E-V-I-O. But again, SouthsideGOP.org. Or turnchicagored.org if you don't remember Southside GOP.
Beautiful. Devin, man, it was such an honor to have you on the show today. God bless you, my friend. Keep fighting out there. Anytime you want to come back, anytime you got something you need to promote, LFA is your home, and we're going to stand by you guys and support
Appreciate you any way we can.
Thank you. God bless you, Devin. All right, folks, that's a wrap over here on Matter of Fact. We are going to bring the heat today. It is Tuesday, May 8th. Please do us a huge solid and smash this like button. I know these shows were a little bit different, but this is super important. And I want to give a voice to the people that have had their voice taken away by our corrupt, tyrannical government. So please help me. by smashing that like button, sharing this content. God bless each and every one of you guys. We'll be here same place, same time tomorrow. And I look forward to seeing each and every one of you guys. God bless.